Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How are you doing? It's a really, really gorgeous day outside. A great day for Donald Trump to cancel the North Korean Kim Jong-un party. Oh, well, I'm sure. I just, you know, it's not good. It's not good, but are we really surprised? Let me tell you, thanks a lot for listening. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is an amazing radio station. We have like over 65 shows, and you should go to our website. Go to www.radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Give us some money. And also download our app, because we have so many great shows. And like, if you download our app, you could listen to it all day. It's like all different stuff. Comedy, music, every kind of music you could like or want to know about. You can learn. It's actually fairly educational, but mostly entertaining. Okay, there you go. So I've got a really fantastic artist on today, Chris Boers, and we're going to talk about his solo show, which is up at Art During the Occupation Gallery, which is Christopher Stout's project. Christopher Stout. Shout out to Christopher. And it's up now through... when is it up through?
It closes on Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Well, that's more reason why everybody should come to the party on Friday night, this Friday night. I'm definitely going to be there. Chris, you're going to be there, right?
Definitely.
Okay, so it's 6:30 to 8 p.m., and it's at 119 Ingram Street in Brooklyn. I also, you know what? So anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today. But I did want to make a little point, because I went to my stepson's wedding this weekend, and it was fabulous. It was in Texas. He married an awesome female. She's great. They're good for each other. I've talked about them before, and like how they both make a really good big effort with their relationship and how much more mature it is than mine and my husband's. I've talked about this. But on the way back, we visited a friend of ours who has an artist who has stage 4 colon cancer, who we love dearly and is doing well right now. But I just wanted, you know, I noticed when I was there, and I want you guys to think about this, like there are a lot of artists and creative people who are not, we think of maybe people without healthcare as more people that don't have, you know, jobs or uneducated or stuff like that. But there's a lot of very educated artists who are not getting healthcare. And when you don't get healthcare, you don't have preventative medicine, and preventative medicine is really important for all of this stuff. So I'm not telling you to do anything to like get out of your basement or get a job or anything. I'm just telling you, like, that's where our society is fucked up, and I just want to point that out so that we don't forget about it. All right, there. Is my finger wagging? Chris, is my finger wagging? Is it?
I'm not sure, but did you hear about that guy who was living in his parents' house and his parents sued him?
Yeah, that's awesome, okay. Right?
Yeah, 30 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank God that my stepson got married and moved out before all that happened. Anyway, so I want to, we're going to get right to Chris Boers. So his show is up right now. And I want to tell you a little bit about Chris. He's a New York-based artist. So he uses graphic post-pop conceptual work that features, I'm trying to like get this to you without like reading it and making it sound pedantic, but he uses a lot of pop art images. One of his classic images is Mickey Mouse giving the finger, which I think you got in high school or somewhere.
Yeah, I had that from high school, and I actually used to publish small press comic books and also zines and things in high school and even before that. And somebody gave that to me, and it was originally a graphic that you were supposed to put on somebody's car. Can I curse?
Fuck yes.
Okay. All right. So yeah, the original graphic, it came with a little bit of text and it said, hey, fuck you. You don't know how to park or something like that. So I took that part off of it, but I've had that ever since I was 15 or 16 or something. And it's this grungy photocopied sort of really low quality drawing of Mickey Mouse giving the middle finger.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great. So he uses, so Chris uses a lot of logos from hardcore punk bands, political advertising, t-shirt images. So think of like comedy versus heavy metal imagery, but done as like these really fabulous, very graphic, very original paintings. And he coined the term virtual dumpster diving to describe the practice of taking images and videos of the web. So anyway, you should just come and really see the show. And I could get into explaining it, but you can also look it up on I just posted right on my Facebook page the whole, you know, just go look it up, because I'm not going to describe paintings to you on the air. It's not worth it to anybody. And the work is great. You don't take my word for it. Do your own fucking research, you lazy assholes. Oh, I can't believe I'm saying that. Must be the energy in the room. Thank God Chris is still smiling at me. Okay, so here's a little bit more about Chris Bors. He was born in Ithaca, New York, and he received his MFA from the School of Visual Arts. And I did research and found out he also got a BA from RISD, which he never mentioned.
Actually, no.
You didn't?
No,
you
no.
Didn't graduate
I did,
there?
No. I did study there, but I didn't. I actually went to University at Albany.
Oh.
SUNY. So
did you ever meet my old roommate, Dagmar Frinta, when you were at RISD?
I wasn't there very long. I took classes there, but it was... I had an amazing experience, but I basically used that as sort of a finishing school to sort of get my portfolio together to go to grad school.
Oh, so that worked.
Yeah.
It really worked. So anyway, here's some of his solo shows. He's been exhibited widely. Randall Scott Projects in Washington, PS1 MoMA. That's a big deal. White Columns, that's a big deal. Bronx Museum of the Arts, Tilo Fine Arts. Shout out Michelle Tilo. Casino Luxembourg, Berlin, Germany, and its work's been reviewed in the New York Times, Time Out, New York, Vogue Italia, Zing Magazine, Brooklyn Rail. But also, beyond that, Chris, I keep wanting to call you
Christopher. You can call me Christopher. That's
I know, no. But I know you as Chris,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Now I'm reading this, I'm thinking Chris. He's Christopher. All of a sudden, I've gotten really formal. Chris is also an extremely well-respected art writer, and if you look at the resume or whatever, there's like a whole bunch of stuff that just recently, not like 10 years ago, recently he wrote for Art Forum. He's written for a lot of other stuff, and he's also written a lot on music in Thrasher, which I don't know enough about that kind of stuff to even, but you guys maybe do. Anyway, so this solo show that's up now is called American Jesus, and it's titled after the Bad Religion song and presents new paintings using bold graphics and text commenting on our current political climate, commodification, trash culture, and personal obsessions. So here's is that, I did it.
That's great.
Yeah, that worked.
Yeah. It's a mouthful, but
it was true. I told you the truth. I have corroboration, unlike some people. But anyway, so the thing is that this is what I told Chris, and I agreed this is what we were going to do. I'm not springing this on him, really. Too much. But so here's the thing. The person that I've known, Chris, I don't even like remember when I met you. Do you? It seems like
it's been a while.
Like maybe the 90s, the aughts? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like I always sort of saw you, knew you, encountered you at various openings or had mutual friends. And then we just started talking at some point, and we were like, oh yeah, this person is whatever. Somehow
I don't really remember. We both are really good friends with Eric Doringer.
Mm-hmm.
I think of you as somebody I got to know through him, like somebody who I knew who you were. But so anyway, well, I'm going to tell you my impression of, I'm going to tell you people at home, my, or wherever the fuck you are, you know, out in your boat, probably, you know, in the Hamptons, who knows where you are. But I'm going to tell you my impression of Chris Boers, which is very different from what I think inspires his work. And we're going to talk about white male masculinity a little bit. So, just stick with me. So the thing is that my impression of you, Chris, you people, is that Chris, and I told him this before, that he seems extremely like smart and very intellectual and very, very thoughtful, and a bit maybe like there's obviously the way he presents and his work is really, really different. So he seems like a very gentle, intelligent, deep thinking white guy. Straight white. No, I don't know if you know straight, but white guy. Okay. And you don't, and so from doing this research and all this stuff, like I'm digging into it and I'm realizing like I've known him for years and years and years. And I never really talked to him about the fact that he's married. I mean, I kind of maybe knew that he has a kid. And then I also found out a lot of stuff about his masculinity from his the way he presents and how macho the stuff he uses in his work is. Like, I'm just going to tell you like about two of his videos. You can find out about this and then you'll understand the examples and then we'll actually have this conversation. So one of his videos is called Slayer, 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 which I think was done in the 90s, Chris?
I believe so. Yeah. It might have been early 2000s. I have to look on my website.
Well, it's a long time ago. The actual year is fine. You don't need to know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's all about how Chris telling the story and playing Slayer, you know, that band, that heavy metal band. And
2003.
And it's a story from his high school years where he went to a Slayer concert and you got a ride with people you didn't know or something.
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
And then you took LSD for the first time and then you had to drive them home. And then your dad, you were afraid, everything worked out okay, but like you were afraid, you know, your dad didn't recognize that you were tripping and that you had just driven a bunch of people home that you didn't know and you got away with that. But anyway, and then this other thing that I can't get over is this video you did called Modern Day Cavemen, where you lived in the Islip Art Museum for 9 days. You lived there 24 hours a day. And so that's really amazing. And the way that he did it, folks, is you know how you did it. The way he did it was he was dressed in caveman attire and did not shave, shower, or talk to museum visitors. And it seemed as if that was to make a statement about the basic instincts, sexual desires, and everyday living practices that humans continue to exhibit despite emotional, psychological, and physical health problems. So there's a side. So will you agree with this hypothesis then, Chris? There's this, the way you present is, I'm going to say, almost mild-mannered. And the way that your work is, it's very aggressive and very masculine. Does that make sense to you? Have you heard this before?
I think it can be perceived as that and it, at times. And I remember having a studio visit once. I had a short-term studio at LMCC. And mm-hmm. I remember a particular dealer that I was trying to, wrangle and get him to look at my work. And he had known like the earlier sort of some of my performative stuff. And then when he saw my newer work, he was kind of shocked and because there was at some point, I kind of had to condense it because I had so many different ideas with my work, with video, with photo-based work, audio work, what have you, performance. But he was kind of shocked that there was this other aspect of like the hardcore punk music culture. And he was sort of thinking me as that I was more of like a conceptual performance-based artist. And he was kind of, he was a little bit not taken aback, but he was just, he didn't realize that I had this background of this sort of I don't know, like what you said, like hypermasculine or aggressive, you know, interests like in pop culture, such as hardcore punk or pro wrestling or things that I sort of were really influential to me as when I was younger. And even up until now, like I'm not jettisoning that background at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And how, like, there seems to be a lot. You know, you're definitely somebody that people respect and are, and, you know, have a very highly visible profile in the art community. But how come we don't know about your wife and your kids? Where are they? Where are they? Why don't we see them?
Kid. Yeah. In general, well, when my son was younger, actually, we did take him out a lot. He still comes to openings.
How old is he?
He is six, almost seven. When we were first, when he was younger, we used to, I mean, we took him to see the, gosh, what was it? A retrospective at MoMA, like when he was just born. So he's been
pre-verbal.
De Kooning.
Powerful
de Kooning. We took him to de Kooning time. Retrospective a few weeks after he was born. So he's been out and about. My wife is a painter, Keta Iwinidou. Shout out to Keta Iwinidou. She's from Cyprus, so she's a Greek Cypriot. She is, you know, very supportive of my work, and she also has her own practice as a painter. Sometimes we travel in different circles. I think as you grow as an artist, you have to, and when you have other responsibilities, you also have to sort of pick your battles. Like you can't necessarily, you know, you want to support your friends and, right, and you want to go to openings of your friends and what have you, but you also, when you have a child, you know, sometimes you have to split up from your partner and say, okay, like I'm going to go out tonight and you can, you know, go to your friend's opening the next night and kind of, or, you know, you can,
Oh, you need a babysitter. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You need somebody to move in and just take care of the kids.
Like a full-time au pair would be good.
Yeah. Then you guys could hang out.
Might be
together.
A little expensive, but yeah, I mean, we do go to things, a lot, but
I'll move in. Yeah.
But we definitely, you know, it's hard. I mean, you do have to make choices. Like during this past year preparing for this show, I didn't go to as many openings, of course.
Right. So your wife has like her painter friends, different friends?
I would say she has her own circle. We have a lot of crossover, definitely. Mm-hmm. But she's done some curating with some of her friends in the past year or so, like at spring break. So, you know, at some point you have to sort of find your own tribe. And I think there is definitely some crossover. But I think when you're younger and you just sort of are like new to the scene, you just kind of like, oh, let's check out everything. Let's go to every opening. And, and you're always, if you have a partner, you're probably with them all the time, seeing everything. And that just gets exhausting after a while.
You can't
just see everything.
Well, you got to do your own work. Let's put it that way. So she has different, but do people, are people surprised, like, when they meet one of you, you know, and they find out that you're married? Are they surprised? Do people, I didn't know you're married, didn't know if you had a kid. Do you hear that sometimes? Like, people listening to this that are going to be, I didn't know Chris was married.
Yeah, I've been married for a while. How long? A long time. We just talked about it. I think it's surprising, actually. We were married in 2000.
See, there's probably all these people going, no wonder he never hit on me at those art openings.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird thing. And I think
that's a long time.
My wife and I think we've sort of been conscious of the fact that we do, you know, we travel a lot together, but I also travel by myself a lot. We're both very strong-willed, independent people. Mm-hmm. And we're not always like hanging out with each other, because we have a lot of similar interests, but we also have a lot of different interests. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have your own life, even when you have a child or even when you're married. You need to sort of have this distance.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you've been married 11 years then, is that it?
No.
What did you say? 2001 or 2007?
2000.
You've been married 18 years. Wow.
I think so. December of 2000. So almost
or something. Holy shit. Holy shit. Wow. See, I didn't know that. So people don't always know that, but I mean, are people surprised? Are they like, I didn't know you're married. I didn't know you have a kid.
You know,
they don't see that.
Well, we were kind of avoiding, you know, the having a child for a while, because it seemed like, you know, we wanted to travel. We wanted to, focus on our work, on our work. When I say work, I mean art. But also, you know, it's weird. I think when we were married, when we first got married, I think those first few years and now I don't think people think it's weird. You know, the art world is a weird thing. It's not
No, I'm saying like they know you, but they don't know your wife, or they don't know you're married or have a kid. Are they surprised? They're surprised. They're like, oh, I don't know.
Sometimes. But what I was going to say is I think when we were younger, I almost think people were more surprised, like when I was living in Williamsburg or whatever, because it seemed like it was just more of a, I don't know.
Do you guys share like housework and child work and stuff
Yeah.
Do you have conflicts about that, or you're pretty good about that?
No, we
work that out.
Oh yeah.
That's a big thing with two artists.
We each work really hard, taking care of our son and dealing with different aspects of that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that, folks. Let's find out where your masculine influences on your art come from. So, when did you start? Where did the art bug come from?
You know, it's interesting. It definitely relates to underground comic books and graphic art. I had a very early experience to underground comic books as like right around as a tween. So like when most people were reading like X-Men and what have you, I was getting into sort of like the more some more like literary comics, like Will Eisner's The Spirit thing. I was reading the Comics Journal, which was, especially at the time, I don't know what it's like now, but it was this very like heady intellectual thing.
Yeah, you were very intellectual about that.
Yeah, definitely. And I got really involved with self-publishing my own comics.
Like in high school?
Even before, in middle school.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I actually saw, shout out to Dennis Kitchen Sink Press. He published The Spirit magazine and many underground comics in the 70s.
Was that considered very precocious? Were your family, was they were like, what the hell is our kid doing? Look at this.
You know, I think they were supportive. I don't think they, I think there were a few instances where, like, for example, I would write away to Kitchen Sink to buy like an old back issue of like The Spirit magazine. And one time they sent me an issue of like Omaha the Cat Dancer, like X-rated, you know, underground awesome. Comic or whatever. And my mom's like, oh, what's this? You know,
did she find out?
Did
you get to keep it?
I didn't, actually. I was quite young. I was probably 13 or something, and I had this X-rated comic.
Perfect age.
And I, you know, soon after that, I did start collecting underground comics from the 60s and 70s. So I was really influenced at a very young age by like R. Crumb, S. Clay Wilson, Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, shout out to Gilbert Shelton, all the sort of like classic underground cartoonists. So that was kind of, that happened at a very influential time. So I didn't think anything of, and what I was going to say is I bought, the whole reason I got into publishing when I was so young was because on vacation I found this old, well, it's not old, now it's old, but it was brand new at the time, was the Underground Comic Price Guide by this guy, Jay Kennedy, who unfortunately I believe has passed. But there was an essay by Dennis Kitchen, and he was just talking about like, oh, if I had never, you know, started publishing, I would have never done blah, 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 blah. And he was kind of like encouraging people. And there was another guy in the West Coast, Clay Geertis. I mean, this is a very like, very few people even know
about all this stuff. So were you publishing it at home?
I was going to the local copy shop and I would, you know, do like old school mock-ups and then just have them photocopied and stuff. But it got pretty advanced at some point. Like,
they must have thought you were really, they must have gotten a kick out of you there. Did you know those guys? Was that your scene?
You know, it was a fairly suburban, kind of, you know, scene, and it wasn't really, I think Ithaca is weird because there was like some cutting edge culture, mm-hmm. But you had to sort of, you definitely had to seek it out. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, there was a really cool club, The Haunt, which had a lot of good reggae and occasionally mm-hmm. like punk and stuff like that. Not really. Most punk shows, we had to go to Syracuse. But there was a lot of stuff going on in Ithaca because of Cornell.
Right, right, right.
It was very progressive, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't say the copy shop that I went to was so progressive.
Right.
But they were.
It was Ithaca.
But Ithaca's
where Cornell is.
Yeah.
So I want to get into your background. I mean, it seems like, it seems to me like you have college professor parents or something. So where?
No, not at all.
You grew up in Ithaca.
Yeah.
And so what did your parents do?
You know, it's funny. It would seem that way, but my dad was actually worked for most of his life as doing like, he was kind of like a rate manager or what have you at a utility company. So he was doing, it was more like mathematical.
Did he have a college degree? Did he study math? Or?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had a master's degree from Syracuse. His job was analyzing
statistics
and rates and things like that for this utility company. Mm-hmm. So I really had no idea what he did other than the fact that, you know, he went away every day to this job. And, you know, I mean, I knew where his office was. I knew occasionally we would hear like bits and pieces about his life.
Mm-hmm. So was it like one job for years and years? You know,
it was mostly the same job.
Very stable.
Yeah.
And what about your mom?
And my mom, for like, I would say up until I think maybe middle school or so, she was a stay at home mom and raised three kids. And then I think around middle school, she went back to a public job and worked in the school system. And she worked for many, many years as a library assistant at a great school in Ithaca, like an elementary school.
They sound like very, you know,
responsible,
very good. Yeah. Nice, decent, you know, really good people, decent, like, you know, no bullshit, you know, down to earth people. Right.
Yeah, they were. I mean,
did they take you to art museums or anything like that?
Not so much. I think.
Did they have like hobbies? Were they creative in any way?
My mom leans more toward the creative side. My dad was more about like, I mean, he was good with his hands. Like he could build things and he was really more of a mechanic. He's really into like motorcycles and he rides Observe Trials, which is a very like kind of niche sport. It's kind of like a weird niche sport that a lot of people don't even know about. It's basically like it's kind of like enduro, but it's much slower. Like it's about,
does it involve motorcycles?
It is, but
he's really into motorcycles.
Yeah,
which is a really manly thing.
Yeah, totally.
Was he a manly, is he a manly man?
I think he has his sensitive side, but he definitely comes from sort of like, you know, comes out of a generation, sort of like the greatest generation, very, you know, patriotic. And both of my parents grew up very sort of, you know, like working class, like they grew up in Endicott and Binghamton, mm-hmm. New York, and very family oriented, mm-hmm. and sort of.
Are they Republicans or were they?
We don't talk about politics much. Let's put it that way.
Okay, yeah. And then, so are you the middle or oldest?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. Interesting. And so brothers, sisters?
Two older sisters.
And what did they do?
One of my sisters works at a university press. And my other sister, she's like a manager at, I don't want to call out her company or anything,
on this station.
She works in the insurance industry.
Oh, so they sound a lot more, let's say, traditional.
My older sister may be a little bit more traditional. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My other sister is definitely very progressive. Mm-hmm. They're both have been great over the years, like both very supportive of what I do. Mm-hmm. They both came to my show in DC a few years ago, which was awesome to have family there, especially like when you're in a city and you don't know anyone, like you're in a new city, you know, it's not New York.
But where you're the artsy kid.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So they must really appreciate that.
Yeah, they've been very supportive, and you know, they don't always understand everything,
right?
But they always try to, you know.
Was your family religious? You guys go to church?
We were. Up until high school, I went to church almost every Sunday. It was kind of, I wouldn't say that was, I mean, it was boring.
Yeah.
But I did go to Sunday school up until, I don't know, middle school or something like that, and that was kind of horrible experience in some regards, I think. Maybe horrible is not the right word, but it just seemed like a huge chore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And when you get older, you start questioning things and or not, I guess, but you know.
No, I mean, that would be the time if one was to question things. So, but was religion a big part of your family or just integrated in there or? What is it? Protestant?
Roman Catholic.
Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did make a video about that. I mean, I think the whole thing about it, this would be like you could do like a 4-hour podcast about religion, but it,
you could.
It just seems
it's been done.
So, it just seems so, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of hypocrisy, of course.
So, it's not really relevant to you now. I mean, it's influenced you, I'm sure, right?
It has. I think it just seems a lot of times. I'm you know, shout out to everyone who is religious and it helps them on a personal level and what have you. But I think it can also be manipulated to do a lot of evil in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so
it
can be a real slippery slope. And it, you know, people just seem like they can kind of
Religion has to be used cautiously and with discretion. Let's do our station ID now. What do you say?
Awesome.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and get people to go to the show. That's Radio Free Brooklyn is presenting. It's A Night of Dreams, which is going to be at the Footlight Bar, which we love. Have you ever been there in the Footlight Bar? It's a great bar.
Nope.
It's on 465 Seneca Avenue in Ridgewood, starts at 7 on 528. I think that's, is that a Monday? I'm not even sure. That's not good that I don't know. But anyway, 528. And it's all about these people doing their favorite dream roles. So I know the host of the show is Jonathan Lerner, and he's fabulous. And him and his, and, you know, people. So we organized a show. It's like a cabaret show, and it's going to be people doing their dream Broadway roles. His show is great. And you guys should check that out. Thanks for listening. And you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here with Chris Boers, who currently has a show, solo show up at Art During the Occupation Gallery nearby in Ridge, in 119 Ingram Street. And they're having a party there tomorrow night, 6:30 to 8. So come by, we'll be there, and we want you to check out his work. And back to Chris. So we decided that religion is something that needs to be used carefully. But I wanted to know more about your high school years. And were you interested in art as a little kid, or how did that, or was it just you realized, did you draw? Did you do any of that stuff?
You know, it's funny. I mean, we were talking a little bit about this before the show started, but yeah, I mean, I always, there's a real sort of, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word, but I wouldn't say I was like overly artistic. I was really into comics and drawing my own comics and kind of making my own things. Like I was really into Mad Magazine and Cracked and stuff like that.
So you were really inspired by your exposure to comics and music too, I think,
Yeah, music.
Did that come later?
A little bit. I would say that I really started getting into, when I say alternative, I don't mean like alternative rock, but I would say alternative to pop. I really started getting into like underground music as a freshman in high school when I got exposed to punk rock and hardcore and metal that wasn't like mainstream metal.
Right.
Like I don't think people, I mean, a lot of people, like older people may not even realize this, but like a lot of younger people, it probably would blow their mind to know that, you know, I mean, older people know this, or people that have been around the music industry, but to know that like bands like Metallica were really underground at one point.
Sure.
I mean, they were not, you know, played on the radio. They were like, I mean, they became popular quickly, but it was not from radio exposure.
You knew about them from the old days, from the beginning.
You know,
where'd you get your music information?
Yeah, not from the very beginning. I mean, my older sister was pretty into music. But definitely not like harder, heavier music. I was super into Kiss when I was little, you know, because they were like so theatrical.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably like my exposure to sort of like hard rock.
Funny. A little kid with listening to Kiss.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Did you put makeup on? Did you try that? Did you imitate it?
I think I only did maybe one Halloween, Peter Criss, the drummer. Uh-huh. I have a picture of that. Yeah, I mean, they were a huge band. They were sort of like on the downswing probably by the time I got a little bit older. But a friend of mine actually was, one of his cousins was the drummer who passed away. Not the original drummer, but the second drummer.
Still.
And I remember we were trying to like get backstage and somehow we couldn't, you know, like his family wasn't.
They didn't have enough pull.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah.
But
so was that? Did that seem rebellious, or what did your family? Was your family aware of it?
I didn't realize how. I wouldn't say again because now, like because of social media and because now metal is really. I mean, it's not that it wasn't popular, but it definitely like took a downswing in the 90s. But like metal and underground music now is huge.
But at the time it was scary. I'm wondering if so here's my assumption. My assumption is that maybe your family was restrictive in certain ways, maybe.
I think I tried to hide some of the more blatant aspects.
And this was a way that you could express yourself. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tried to hide some of the more blatant aspects of the culture that I was sort of sucking up very, you know, quickly, like a sponge, like whether it was, you know, pornographic comics like Escalade Wilson or Robert Crumb or what have you, or whether it was, you know, quote unquote, like satanic music, like early Slayer was super satanic and you know, a lot of like Satan references and things like that.
I'm wondering if some of this was like a rebellion to being, you know, to your religious training or something.
Some of it definitely was. I mean,
did that make you angry? Was there some anger in there? I mean, not that it makes sense to be angry, but just emotionally we get angry at shit. So like, do you think maybe you were angry about and disappointed that maybe religion wasn't what you thought it was supposed to be, that you were taught? Do you think that might have had something to do with it?
I think so. I mean, I think just like when you hit reality, the reality of the world, which is very harsh, and just, you know, you sort of question everything, basically, like how can all of these, you know, things take place in the world, you know, if there's this invisible man who we're placing our trust in, that's a, you know, part of a Slayer lyric. I mean, it's really Jesus saves, you know.
There you go. And the name of your show now,
American Jesus.
American Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that comes from a Bad Religion song, which is almost 20 years old, I think, that song. But it's totally, I almost feel like it's, it could be written about, you know, Trumpistan. So,
did you ever have a talk with your parents about religion? Like saying, like, how could this be true or any of that? Did you ever think to talk to them about it? Or did you remember having any kind of thoughts or discussions about that?
Not so much. I think, you know, as soon as I hit high school, I basically just said, yep, I'm going to sleep in, or, you know, I just stopped going to church. And I don't think we ever had any deep discussion about it. In a way, I think a lot of people in society now would be much better off with, like, well, I don't know, maybe that's not true, but you know, just like let people live their own lives in an almost like don't ask, don't tell thing. Like, hey, if you want to believe that, fine, but don't infringe on my right to believe or not believe or
sure.
what have you, like whatever yeah. you want your lifestyle to be.
Yeah. Did you feel like, were your parents, when you stopped wanting to go to church, were they like okay with it, or did
oh, yeah.
you feel like?
Yeah, they never pressured me really. I think religion, again, it can be very comforting for people, especially
yeah.
like,
no, we're not, you know, yeah, I mean, we're not even debating.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no debate about that. I mean, religion, you know, it's like everything else. If it works and it helps you in any way, then that's great. You know, anything can be perverted, you know, anything
right.
can be perverted. But did you feel like a split with your family? Like, did you feel like, oh, they believe in all this stuff and I don't?
Well, one of my sisters, like I said, was very, you know, very like left wing, progressive, whatever. So I kind of related to her more, I think, during those years of sort of, you know, moving away from, you know, the old guard of like my grandparents and being very traditional and that sort of what have you. But I always sort of just respected everyone for doing their own thing. You know, I would never, you know, I didn't,
right.
you know,
right.
I didn't want to like,
but your sister kind of opened a path up for
a
you
a little bit. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Especially like in college and what have you. Like, I didn't think it was like, I didn't feel like an outcast or anything.
So what were your high school years like? Like, who were your friends? And
you know, they were pretty rebellious. I got good grades, but I could be kind of a, you know, I kind of got into a group of kids that were like really into metal and punk and I also actually was really into sports. I wrestled, which is a super masculine thing.
Yeah.
And that was I did injure myself quite seriously in college doing that. But
you were on the wrestling team in college?
I was for 3 years.
Wow.
It was pretty intense.
Did you guys know that about Chris Borst?
It was pretty intense. Yeah. We used to actually work out with Olympic athletes at Albany.
Wow.
So it was pretty intense.
Training?
It was, yeah. Well, they were there working out and we often would work out with them. And so, yeah, I had some pretty hardcore training partners that were,
it's
I would say other than boxing, it's probably like one of the most brutal sports physically. You know, it's, people don't realize, I think, how intense it is.
You
like,
mean because you have a live human that
trying to kill you. Yeah.
Not does it feel like that? Is it a good way to express anger, do you think?
You know, what I was going to say is, looking back on it, in a way, I'm glad I was really active in it in a way, because I think it could have been easy to fall. This sounds ridiculous because, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was definitely no angel growing up, but I definitely think like some of my friends really got sucked into
drugs, like, and alcohol, fast cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Fast cars, fast women. I really think, you know, the culture in Ithaca, it's easy to sort of get sucked into, like, I don't even know what to say, but it's kind of like this drug infused
sure,
haze
I think,
yeah. I don't even know what it's called, whether you're in the metal scene or the sort of hippie scene or whatever. I mean, I saw a lot of my friends. One of my friends actually wound up getting killed in downtown Ithaca and in a very horrible accident. Well, it was called an accident, but the guy got, I think, manslaughter charges against him. They went after him for murder, but he owed like $100 to a guy for a bag of weed, and the guy whacked him in the back of the head, and he wound up dying because he hit the pavement. So I mean,
those were your friends.
Well,
or that. I mean, I'm not saying that was, but you were exposed to that.
Yeah,
you
no, he was a friend of mine.
To a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to picture you as that person today. So were you, did you seem like a different person then? Or
I would, think
I,
so.
Would I have seen a different person?
I think so,
what,
yeah.
What do you think, what would that, can you describe what would be different or what that person was like or what was different about you?
You know what, a lot of it I think is just from experience. And I think a lot of it is from, you know, reading, traveling, you know, just education. And I think a lot of the problems in our society now are based on the fact that people don't progress from who they are, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm not totally, okay with everything, you know, that I did or was.
No, no,
when
I'm
I was
just
a
trying to
teenager.
I'm just trying to picture, yeah. Like, were you, cause like one of the things we were talking about is that I want to get to is that, in the time we have 15 minutes, we have 15 minutes, so we can do this. But anyway, so like the thing that, you know, as a white guy in the art world and all that, and you're not, you know, you're one of the ones that we like, meaning that, you know, you're very, you know, intellectual, you know, you seem smart and gentle and not the kind of guy that would ever like, you know, harass anybody or anything like that. And, the like, but your work, like I was saying, seems kind of has a macho overtone, as some macho overtone, and you don't have that when the way you present. And then, so I'm wondering if that was something that you might have exhibited more of in college or in high school, if you ever, like the days that you're talking about, did you seem like a tough kid?
You know,
That's one of my.
I think, yeah, that's a good question. I think I changed a lot my senior year when I just became more accepting of whatever, alternative lifestyles and just opened my mind up and was like, hey, we're all here, you know, on this mm-hmm. planet and everyone is equally, should be equally accepted, you know, no matter, you know, skin color, sexual orientation, but what have you.
Did you used to feel more like angry and judgmental as a high school
kid? I think
kid?
So. I think, you know, when you're in a suburban sort of upstate, like central New York town, I talked to the artist once. I don't know if you know Corey Archangel, who's quite
yeah,
well
I know
known.
Who that is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were talking about this, like, I mean, I think his wife or girlfriend at the time, was saying like, we're sort of talking about like, well, why were kids into this, like, you know, super aggressive music like Slayer at the time, this kind of like super heavy, super aggressive, macho sort of, you know, music. And I think part of it was part of it is maybe just boredom or what have you, but you're trying to sort of see your way out of this world and make it to, you know, get out of the suburbs, get out of whatever and
sure.
make it to a bigger city, make it and somehow say to yourself, like, there's more to this than just what's on the surface. But, you know, like I said, I don't want to totally jettison that. And I totally respect mm-hmm. all that, mm-hmm. that world and that culture. But I think at some point you do have to grow, whether that's through travel or
yeah,
education or, but not everybody
yeah.
does. So
No. I mean, you know, well, you've obviously grown so much that it's aroused curiosity as to where does it come from? You know
right.
what I mean? So did you get in fights a lot or anything?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think.
Did you pick on kids? You seem like this is what I'm going to say, and I'm not right.
Yeah.
I'm saying, but you seem like you feel guilty or bad, or maybe you have, and I'm not saying you should. You're just a kid, but it sounds like maybe you mistreated some people in high school or did some things that you don't feel so good
no,
about.
No, I only remember. I think.
You've made up for it since. I've no
yeah,
doubt.
Yeah, no, I don't really remember getting into fights or anything like that. I remember once picking on a kid who was picking on another, like, smaller kid.
Really?
Like, you can't pick on a little kid because, you know, like, but that was sort of a, Yeah, that was sort of a weird thing, like trying to teach a kid a lesson for picking on someone else that was younger than him,
but
or whatever.
Did you have to lie about what you were doing or where you were going or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think life was much different back then. I mean, when I teach now, I tell kids like, hey, you know, having like no cell phone was awesome because you could just disappear for a whole day.
Oh, sure.
And no one would have any idea where you were.
Sure.
You know,
what about drugs and alcohol? Was that part of your high school experience?
Definitely. But what I was going to say, earlier, what I was going to say is, in a way, I really wish I had done more with music and you know, more creative things than wrestling. But in a way, I'm glad I got into it because I think that kept me, although I did, you know, a lot of experimentation with drugs and alcohol, like a lot of teenagers do. I think that the commitment level needed to be an athlete, and especially like a wrestler, you know, you can't like, you have to be careful or you're going to get killed by somebody. You know, you can't be like hungover really,
right.
You know, you have to be
sharp
and you have to be in shape and what have you. So in a way I'm glad that I didn't fall into the trap of just like constantly being stoned all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you take like, you know, LSD? Well, yeah, I guess you took LSD.
Not in high school.
Did you smoke pot?
Anything else?
You don't even have to say.
No, not really.
Just mostly like pot and drinking normal.
Yeah.
Like normal bad kids.
Yeah.
You weren't a bad kid though, were you?
Mm,
did you have bad kid friends?
Some. You know, I think kids did get, I think I was on the fringe of these two worlds. And I think I was able to navigate it in a smart way. And I think that's what my work also is about, because it's also like you kind of have to be into this world of like punk and hardcore to see, like I'm really into it. Like I've written about it. I've gone to hundreds of concerts. I promoted them. I have friends in bands that are, you know, well-known bands and stuff that I'm, that appreciate what I'm doing with my art, but also you also have to be somewhat removed to make art about it, because otherwise then you might as well just be making like a t-shirt you know. But it's, but I think even back then I was like on this weird dividing line between, you know, I don't even know how to say it, but sort of, I think it's self-awareness.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I don't want to go too far into a certain thing, because then you can, you know, not that there's anything wrong with getting too far into punk or metal, but I'm saying, you know, with some of the more dangerous aspects of some subcultures, like I saw a lot of my friends or people that I hung out with, you know, get really in trouble with drugs.
Really?
You know,
hard drugs or
something. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, there was a kid who I know now has that we grew up with that, you know, got really into heroin or, you know, that had serious drug addiction issues.
So you were around people that were taking heroin, or you knew people?
I don't think I knew about that in high school, but I knew there were a lot of people that seemed like, I mean, a lot of these people, thankfully, I've learned now that some of them have really, you know, completely made a 360.
Sure.
But at the time, you know, and when you're a kid, you're just kind of like, I mean, you're not going to do an intervention necessarily.
No.
But you're.
Why would you even think of that? Wow.
You know,
see that? That's what I'm saying.
But it's weird, because looking back on it, there were some kids that really had a lot of problems, you know,
and they were
using drugs to escape from those problems.
But you seem like an innately thoughtful person, you know, and intellectually curious. I think that's innate. And you also seem like very, you know, pretty driven and hardworking and productive, like, you know, making those magazines, zines and all that stuff. So you had that probably by nature to sort of thwart all the bad stuff that could have gotten out of hand. I think, you know, you're sensible. You're an innately sensible person with probably a good foundation from your family. So was there a turning point? Was there like an incident or something that you said, like, I don't want to, I'm going to, like, that really affected you, that got you away from wanting to, like?
You know, I had a couple older friends that were, that were really, you know, that sort of were really nice to me and sort of were like, you know, they were a little bit older than me. But at one point, one of them got into some trouble with the law. And I remember that was sort of a turning point. Like, I don't want to, you know, be in a situation where it's going to affect me in a really bad way. You know, I didn't want to go down that path. Let's put it that way. And that were like some of the people I were hanging out with were sort of like on the fringe of potentially, you know, going down that road of, you know, some of it was like pranks or stuff like that, that they would do. But then as you get older, you know, it becomes, it doesn't.
Well, you're not like a 12-year-old, you know, lighting something on fire.
Right.
You're an adult doing something.
Even
really
though there was,
up.
Did you hear about that teenager who threw the smoke bomb into the cat? He was just like, the judge is making him pay $36 million in restitution or
wow.
something. Yeah.
No.
He threw a smoke bomb in a, somewhere, I can't remember what state it was, but he caused this wildfire or something. I think he
wow.
was 16.
Oh, I think I did hear about
and
that.
It's just insane.
Well, good. He learned. Yeah, that could have been, you know. But so one of your friends, did they get arrested or something?
I don't know.
Or
yeah, I mean, I think.
But you were a witness to that. Did that affect you?
I think it might have been. It might have been like right when I was about to go to college. I can't remember, but you know, again, like Ithaca, because of Cornell and whatever, when you were younger, you were sort of like part of this college scene, even though you weren't in college yet.
Right.
And there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of, you know, people had older brothers and sisters that were in college and what have you. So you were sort of exposed mm-hmm. to a lot of this culture mm-hmm. and, but that wasn't what they got in trouble for. Like, but yeah, I think,
you saw some demonstrations that it could have gotten in a way that wouldn't have been good for that. You didn't want to go down.
Yeah. I mean, I think we realized now it's time to grow up.
And how about girls? Did you date a lot or?
Not really. I think I really didn't, you know, actually, especially in middle school, I was super shy.
Uh-huh.
I think I only had like one girlfriend in high school.
Uh-huh. Did you meet your wife in college or how did you meet her?
Second year of graduate school.
Oh.
So yeah, at SVA.
And she's Greek?
She's Greek Cypriot. Yeah, she was born in Cyprus. Her family
wow.
still lives there. She's had several exhibitions over there of her work.
Oh, wow. So you've been to Greece a lot. Have you?
Greece and Cyprus. Yeah.
Oh,
we used to travel a lot through Athens. Mm-hmm. There's a great art scene there.
Mm-hmm. Does she speaks two languages?
Yeah, she speaks Greek and our son is he's bilingual.
That is so fabulous. So anyway, we have a minute and a half left. So I want to make sure that so I'm like totally, you know, your show is really fabulous. You must feel really great about it.
Yeah, I'm super happy. I worked really hard. I think there's 16 paintings.
It's a lot of work. Really beautifully hung though, like just the right amount and I think, you know, you guys got to show up and see this stuff. And is it great to see all that stuff? It's probably inspiring you to even so you made all that work and now are you going to be thinking about your next body of work or is that where you are kind of?
Definitely. I think it just put me on the right track to continue working you know, I think it's just great for people to see images and kind of get the work out there and people, because I think people have seen my works in bits and pieces.
Right.
And, you know, I've shown around a little bit, but this is like, I would say this is like my first major show actually of painting. So
yeah, I mean, I've seen your work around for years, but I could see that. Well, you know, as our old friend Annie Herron, you must have known her.
I knew
from Williamsburg.
I met her.
I always like to quote this, what she says, which I learned very early on from her, which is showing your work changes your work. And I think that's really, really true for everyone.